Welcome to Growth Uncut, a podcast that interviews different people from around the world to share their views on personal growth. We feel passionately about connecting communities and raising awareness around social justice, humanity, and relationships. And today I am really fortunate to be joined by Marcus Olazulu. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Sarah. Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor.
Oh, it's absolutely great. And I think, in terms of, I guess, our backstory, we kind of met by accident almost when I went up to work in a prison. So it's been fantastic to share your house and share that experience and build a friendship as a result of essentially a bookings.com kind
Definitely.
of booking. So yes, it's been brilliant. So Marcus, can you tell
Yes.
us a little bit about yourself, just to start us off?
Certainly. My name, as you said, is Marcus Olazulu. I'm mixed race. My dad is black African and my mum is white British. I was born in North Wales. I studied in Wales at the University of Wales. I studied crop and soil science and then went on to do a postgrad in rural resource management. My first profession after university was as an ecologist. I did that for 5 years. Then I had, should we say, kind of upheaval, life upheaval, but in a positive way. So I learned a lot about myself. I resolved a lot of stuff that was going on for me. And in that space, I had a calling, could we say, and I went on to rehabilitate young offenders in prison. So there's a link there with you, I guess. And I then went on to manage a supported house building, rather, also with supporting people that have just come out of prison. And after that, I was temping and then ended up working now with a housing association where I also help people, but this time people with learning disabilities to live as independently as possible. So that's been my career path in a nutshell.
And you're also an author, correct?
I am an author. Yes, I do that. I do that as a I do that as a hobby. I love it. My first book was Wiccan. Well, the first thing I wrote was actually a script, but my first book is called Wiccan as a supernatural thriller. It's kind of based out, it comes out of me keeping a journal and writing also as part of a cathartic process that I've gone through to kind of resolve and make peace with a fairly abusive past that I had. But all of it has put me where I am now, which I'm grateful for all of it really. So yeah, writing is a great outlet, a great creative outlet for me, definitely.
And I guess looking at that, I guess that brings me really nicely onto the first question, really. So what does personal growth mean to you, would you say, Marcus?
Personal growth is the reason we're here. Personal growth is why we're on Earth. So to I mean, everyone would have their own paths, I guess, but I guess the way I'd define it, I'd probably say it's about finding yourself so that you can be your authentic self with others and be able to engage in the world in a powerful way. I don't think you're able to engage in the world as powerfully until you have resolved things for yourself, that you've kind of made peace with things that you've carried with you, but that marks you out. So if for me, for my life, forgiveness was a massive one. If I hadn't taken the time out to figure out how to forgive my dad and let go of the pain from my childhood, then there would have been no growth. So out of that is where my strength comes from, really. Having let go of things in the past is it's what puts me where I am now. So I've always been drawn to knowledge. I think, learning about yourself, certainly reflecting, I would say, is key. If you're going to grow, there's no point having an experience but then not reflecting on the experience. You don't just learn from the experience unless you reflect and sort of, muddle it in your head and figure out, okay, so what was my learning in this? So Yeah, putting it in a context that makes sense. I think personal growth is, yeah, why we're here, and you know, it's about knowledge and finding your authentic self, I'd say, certainly.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And looking at, I guess, some of those kind of values you've already talked about, maybe. But what are those things that you kind of value in life?
Things I value in life the most, I would say, is connection, connecting with people, certainly. My friends, I value immensely. I value integrity as a moral or value. Integrity is really important to me. It's all coupled, I guess, together with, you know, connecting, openness, integrity. So, it's all of it together. It's kind of like, how can I put it? It's all interconnected, really, I guess. So yeah, it's mostly for me, value wise is, I would say, connection. Of course, there's the, you know, writing is something I value. I value creation. I value fairness in society, that kind of stuff. But I think ultimately what I value the most is to be able to connect with someone. And that takes having to listen intently and having to understand where someone's coming from. So, yeah, that's what I value.
And in terms of that connection, do you feel that as a society we connect? Do you feel that, you know, we've got it cracked, or, you know, what's your thoughts?
As a society, unfortunately, not. I think we could do better. I think it's a tricky one for people to step into others' shoes, and I think that comes from people not being able to iron out their past or look at their suffering, should we say. You know, in life, it's tough. You know, it's tough being in the world, and it's tough living, and it is tough. So, but it's about how you kind of look at it and how you interpret it and how you be with it. You know, if you lean into the hardness, the suffering, then you grow from it. That's ultimate. So I think generally I would say maybe people aren't as emotionally strong, I guess, to be able to listen in such a way that you're able to step into someone's shoes. You know, it takes a lot of energy, should I say. And if there's a lot of turmoil going on for you because you're not dealt with stuff around hatred, or you're angry about stuff and you've not made peace with a family member, or you know, you've lost someone and you can't get over why you lost someone that was so significant to your life, and you're just filled with hate and, you know, all of that stuff, you won't have the space to connect in an authentic, powerful way. And I think that's kind of part of the problem. So I guess for me, maybe it'd be around people being able to access, well, certainly firstly knowing that you don't have to be stuck in a certain space. There is ways of getting around the space, but you obviously have to go through the pain to come out the other side. But when you do come out the other side, you are in a better space then to connect more authentically. So yes, I would say in society there's a lot more that needs to be done around the personal development thing, which is about sort of addressing things in the past, resolving issues, making reconciliation, figuring out how to forgive. You know, I mean, I hated my dad for like 20 years or something. You know, it was massive. And if I hadn't taken the time to go through all the personal development work I did, and CBT and counseling and psychotherapy and all kinds of things, and constantly reading books and trying to figure out how I could make peace with that, then I wouldn't be able to connect. You know, I wouldn't be able to connect with someone in such a level where I can step in their shoes and understand and have empathy. How could I have empathy for someone else when I'm in pain? You know, it's that kind of thing. So yeah, everyone at kind of in society needs to take the time to really ensure that they are strong in themselves and they've figured themselves out. And then as a society, I believe anyway, people then can contribute and engage in a better space.
And I think, you know, just listening to you, it's a really hopeful message, isn't it? You know, like we look at all the challenges, you know, whether that's during COVID or whether it's about, you know, people coming out of prison. You know, one of our group, he came out of prison this morning and he's got no house to go to. He's got no accommodation. He hasn't got a job. All these things are really uncertain for him. And it's almost about how we perceive obstacles and suffering. Whilst we're in it, it's really difficult and really challenging, but there's something really hopeful about what you're saying, isn't there, in the tense sense of if we are able to, through connections with other people, but also through reflecting on our own sense of self, that through those mechanisms there is hope of a brighter future, isn't there, that these obstacles we could possibly overcome.
Most definitely, yes. I mean, you can't have harmony without chaos. The universe is it's put in such a way that there has to be chaos for there to be then harmony. So it's part and parcel of the same thing. You know, I would not be where I am, and I'm so proud of where I am right now in this moment speaking to you, but I wouldn't be here without my past suffering and learning from it, and, you know, making peace with the loss of my mom and making peace with abusive behavior from my dad, all of those things, and then reconciling and forgiving, all of it is part and part. I wouldn't have my creativity. I wouldn't be able to write. My writing comes from having had pain, having had, you know, so you can't have one without the other, I guess. All of it is how it's supposed to be, I guess. And you have to lean into the suffering, because that's where your power lies. I wrote when I was writing Wiccan, I came up with a sentence. It's own your suffering, because it's in that space that your greatness lies. And I, you know, when writing that book, of course, I was tapping into my life or incidents in my life, and that sentence came up and I smiled. I smiled when I typed it in. I was like, wow, yeah, I get this. I get it, you know? So, yeah.
And I know this isn't maybe a question I've sent you in terms of preparing for this podcast, but it's just so fascinating. I'm sorry, Marcus, but that's classic us, isn't it? but I think,
no worries.
You know, if for people that are listening, yeah, so people that are in that dark space where they're really going through it, you know, looking at your story in terms of where you're at now and talking about you feeling that you're authentic and you're at peace, what do you think is that? What advice would you give someone who is in that, like deep in that and really struggling? What's the first step, do you think, to enable them to move forward and start to address, I guess, that and start to lean into it? What is it that people would need to do from your perspective, would you say?
Firstly, is know that it's not going to last. Everything passes. It's not going to last forever. Whatever space or whatever you're going through is not going to last forever. You know, it's a phase, but you have to go through the phase nonetheless, and know that there's a learning in the phase. Know that there's a greatness from having come out of the phase and reflecting and looking back and thinking, okay, this was the lesson that I was supposed to get. You know that whatever you're going through, whatever the obstacle, whatever the challenge, know that, you know, it's tough, isn't it? When you're right in it, it's hard to kind of see, because you're you're blinkered, and it's hard to kind of see outside of that. And you know, people can be telling you and be like, yeah, of course, Marcus, whatever. But I'm right now, I'm hurting. So, but the truth is, it will pass, and it's a learning. Everything's a learning. And you know, I remember, what was this saying I saw? A peaceful, lovely childhood makes for a boring conversation, something like that. And I was like, well, there you go, you know. So kind of, you know, you can't get a story in a book about someone just a jolly life and it's just nothing goes wrong. And, you know, how boring would that book be? You know, you see what I mean?
So, So,
you know, in that context, that's what I mean, I guess. So all of it is how it's meant to be, that there's meant to be a learning in there. And the one thing I used to have, because people call me sometimes a bit of a hippie, but I have this belief, I always have, since I was very little, I always had this belief that we all chose exactly what our path is in life. As in, like, before we were even born in some ethereal world, space, energy, universe, whatever you want to call it. We all chose exactly what path we were going to go through, knowing that these different things was the learning we were going to get from it. So that's a fallback for me when I'm going through any obstacle or challenge. I always think to myself, okay, so obviously I've chosen my path, so I must have chosen this somehow. At the moment, I'm not seeing it. It's looking pretty difficult and tough, but okay, that's fine. Let's see how we go. And I think the one thing I would say as well, because mindfulness definitely helps me a lot, is be present to whatever you're going through. Be present to it. Don't try and avoid it. Don't try and, you know, get drunk and escape. Really lean into it. That's what I mean by leaning into it, because trying to avoid it is what almost multiplies the suffering, if that makes sense. Sometimes it doesn't have to be as painful, but because we try to avoid the situation we're in, we don't want to be with it, the emotion's too much, I can't handle this, so I'll get drunk or whatever people get to, you know, drugs or whatever people use to escape. It doesn't help, because then what it does, until you feel what you're supposed to feel, it just multiplies. And as soon as you feel all of what you're supposed to feel, then you come out the other side and you have a clearer picture of what you're supposed to be looking at, what you're facing, I guess.
It's fascinating, and I guess it brings on really nicely to this next question, really, about inspiration, because what I love, just to share with the audience, what I love about you and what I love about our time together is that after, you know, a great day's work, we kind of come back to your place, get our pyjamas on, and we listen to TED Talks or Impact
or
people that are inspiring, and you always have something to share, and we have these fantastic discussions about inspiration and around new ideas and that kind of conversation. And I guess my question to you is, who is your inspiration, and why do they inspire you?
Wow, there's so many people that inspire me. You inspire me, Sarah. Your being, your compassion, your heart, your profession. You know, you inspire me greatly. But there's so many people. My great good friend inspires me. The chief exec to the organization I'm in at the moment, Grand Union Housing, she inspires me. She's incredible, an incredible woman. With so much compassion, you know, I don't know why, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like when you're really right at the top of the hierarchy, it's harder to be compassionate, maybe, but I might be wrong. But, you know, she's still able to be grounded and compassionate and understanding and all of that. Other people that inspire me, Akala, his mind is just genius. Nice. Just finished reading one of his books called Natives. which was quite powerful. Reniedo Lodge inspires me. This is, again, for the Black Lives Matter, you know, they're trying to, which takes a lot of courage, they're trying to explain and put down into words what's going on so that people kind of understand what's going on for Black people in society. Mandela inspires me massively because, you know, he inspired me, should I say, massively because of forgiveness. And forgiveness for me is a massive thing. You know, when I let go of hate for my dad, and he is like an icon of forgiveness, isn't he? You know, sitting in prison for that time and still coming out with a peaceful I mean, yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot of people inspire me. You know, people I'm sure will come into my life in the future and still be inspiring me. So, yeah, it's I think when you have a certain you have a certain way that you look at the world, when there's a clarity of mind and a cleansing of your heart, you will see actually more inspiration. You will see it. The you know, people are, human beings generally can be really inspiring because, you know, we're so resilient. We deal with so much, and, you know, often we're able to climb out of it and be so. Yeah, a lot of people inspire me.
And in some senses, you know, like you talk about connections, by connecting with those that inspire us, in some senses that propels us, doesn't it? It enables us to learn. It enables us to move forward. And
yes,
and looking at the suffering and looking at that pain that you've already talked about. When we look at that within the context of growth, I guess my question is, what has been your biggest challenge in life, would you say, to this point? And what have you, you know, what have you learned from that experience, and how have you grown as a result of it?
Yeah, my biggest challenge, yes, would have to be forgiving my dad, like I've already mentioned. But, you know, that was one layer. And then there was another layer because my mom passed away when I was 20, and there was a lot of abandonment issues around that. So then I didn't even see that challenge because, you know, the hate for my dad was like overwhelming everything else. But as soon as I'd made peace with my dad, then all this other stuff started bubbling up, and that was even more ingrained, was even deeper. So you know, reconciling with abandonment issues over my mom was certainly because it was affecting my relationships with people, especially, you know, loving, being with partners. It was affecting that, of course, you know, because there was things around, you know, your parents are significant to you, aren't they? And those emotional keys or triggers would then mirror into your day-to-day relationships. So that was a big challenge. And there's a really interesting story. When I went to meet this lady who was using rapid eye movement therapy to as a form of therapy to help people with trauma, because what it was, you know, was trauma in my brain, stuck sort of thing. And I went on a couple of sessions, and it's just literally about looking at her finger while she's chatting to you. She's wagging your finger, so you have to keep turning your eyes, you know, left, right, hence the rapid eye movement thing. It's linked to when you sleep and you have, you know, when you're dreaming and your eyes are like rolling left, right, left, right, left, right. That's when your brain's kind of processing. That's when your brain's kind of making sense and compartmentalizing things and stuff from your limbic brain, from your reptilian brain. So the theory of the practice made sense to me, but they actually don't really understand how it works, to be honest. But anyway, after a few sessions, I came back home. The lady said, oh, I don't need to come anymore, which I was grateful for because it was costing like £80 a session. I was like, oh, thank God, so I don't have to pay any more of this. And she was like, yeah, you got it. And I was like, sure, because, you know, I wasn't feeling anything profound or anything. And she's like, no, you got it. So I got back home and I was peacefully, you know, doing, I think I was putting some entries in a journal. And then all of a sudden I started smelling something burning. like an electrical burn. And I couldn't fix, and I was checking everywhere downstairs. I was looking behind the sockets and checking the plugs and checking all the electrical appliances. I was like, oh my God, what is burning? I can smell this burning. Anyway, after maybe a minute or so of thinking, what the hell? For some reason, I thought, hang on a second, this probably has something to do with my mind, you know, my brain. So I looked it up. I Googled smelling burning, electrical burning. And what came up was that you can have this phantom burning, they call it, where when your brain's done something very traumatic or is repairing or something quite substantial is going in your brain, you smell burning. So people with epilepsy sometimes smell this burning. And it's, you know, it essentially, if you think about it, your neurons are firing, you know, right in our brains. Yeah. We have these neurons firing. And I was literally smelling my brain creating new pathways. I mean, how crazy is that? You know?
Yeah.
And I knew in that moment.
Afterwards, how did it feel?
I just knew, you know, when you just know that you've shifted something, there's just been this shift. I just knew that abandonment issue that was kind of like a seed that just sat deep inside my chest had gone. It had melted away. I didn't have that, you know. And then, of course, you know, I went into a couple of relationships after that, and I knew then that, yeah, oh my goodness, it's gone. It's kind of hard to explain because I couldn't really have explained it to you when I was in it. It's only after it's melted away that I could then see, oh, that this was something in me that was, you know, kind of affecting how I was relating to people on an emotional level. It's quite interesting. Yeah.
Wow, my goodness, that's incredible. And would you say, like you said, when you went into new relationships, was there, in terms of like your authentic self that you talked about earlier, where were you at with that? Was that about, did you have a greater sense of yourself? Did you have a kind of secure sense of yourself? Did you feel, were you free?
Most definitely. So that, you know, there was always a kind of angst, an underlying angst with my whole being. Some nervous energy that was just there, you know, kind of just simmering in the background. And that's gone. You know, so I used to have that even in big meetings. I'd have that at work. I'd never show it. And people would often be surprised, you know, if I say to them, you know, I actually was sat there feeling quite anxious. People would be like, really? Like, I didn't see. Because I masked it very well. I masked it. I covered it up very well. But that's just not there anymore. There's none of that anxiety, on, you know, that simmers in the background about stuff. Even this, like doing this podcast years ago, there would be nerves with this, doing this, because, you know, even though I know I'm chatting to you, but the fact that it's not as a podcast, it's going to be heard by people, there'd be some nerves in the background. And there isn't anymore. And that's come from resolving stuff in my past, definitely.
Yeah. Fantastic. I guess that leads us on. I don't want it to end, to be honest, Marcus, but I appreciate that we could go on for hours, could we really? And we do quite happily talk forever. But I guess my last question to you is just around, you know, moving forward with communities. So if you could improve one thing to grow our communities and make them kind of safer, healthier, happier places, what would you do if you had a magic wand? What would you do?
It will have to be education. I'd say education on all levels. So education about self, education, certainly personal development, because like I said, society can't be as powerful as it can be until people learn how to engage with their suffering. I think that's best way to put it. People learn how to not be hard done by life, doing to them rather than owning it and going, okay, no, this is my learning, da da da. So all of, but all of that's education. You know, I went to a thing called Landmark Education. That's what saved me. I don't think I'd be here today if it wasn't for that. Landmark Education is what saved me initially from giving me the strength to be able to forgive my dad, or the tools, should I say. So it has to be education for me, education on all levels. History, people, you know, learning their history, ability to listen, the ability to, figuring out how to dismantle systems that are not working. You know, systems are broken, I would say, in society right now. You know, none of the systems work. You know, and yet, I guess it's probably overwhelming. Like, people just think, oh, wow, you know, how do we even start to dismantle this to make it a better system? But with education, you can, you know, it's knowing how, isn't it? And and if people invest in that education of learning about themselves and then about others and about, you know, putting things in place, then that would be a good start, I would say, definitely. Because ignorance is something that does not help society go forward at all. So eradicating ignorance, that would be,
yes,
that would,
I like,
be my,
that. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's something there about, like you say, there's that being open, isn't it? It's not about us people knowing the answers or people being the best, or, you know, all of these things that we kind of really nurture, I guess, within the kind of consumerism and kind of neoliberal kind of culture. I think it's about that openness and being receptive to say, do you know what? You know, it's about being humble, maybe. It's about an opportunity where I can grow. It's about things, you know, striving for continuous development, striving to make something better just a little bit at a time. And I think, like you say, education is the way in which we make relationships glue, don't we, in terms of understanding cultures and understanding race or difference or whatever that is, and then really embracing that, embracing difference as a way in which we learn. And I think education a lot of the time can be seen as this kind of really kind of controlling, you know, difficult, not enjoyable, you know, even boring. You know, my son at the moment, who's going through kind of online learning at the moment, really struggling with motivation. But there's joy in learning, isn't there? There's joy in the education.
There's joy. I mean, is this system in education is not great either. That's what I mean. So the schooling system is not great. It doesn't cater for everyone, you see. So, you know, which is terrible, to be honest, because people learn in different ways, and you have just one way in which the education system works at the moment. So, and it doesn't have to be that way. You're right. It should always be encompassed in fun. It should always be fun. Learning should be fun. It shouldn't be this sort of, you know, hard sort of no pain, no gain. I don't buy that. I don't buy no pain, no gain. You know, when I'm writing, if I was sitting there as some kind of struggle, well, my book's not going to be enjoyable. You know, I love writing. There has to be some love there, isn't there? And like, and certainly, yeah, no, fun, definitely. It's yeah, education for sure.
Yeah. I think it's a great ending. Fun, let's do it. No pain, no gain. I think, like you say, it's almost like, let's embrace pain and let's gain. It's almost like the opposite,
exactly,
isn't it, in a way?
Yes, yes.
Could be our new strap line, Marcus.
Yes, embrace pain, embrace pain. And what was the other bit?
Embrace, and gain.
Yeah,
maybe we need
pain
to work on it.
Embrace pain and then gain. Yeah, that's what I would say. Definitely. Yeah. Let's get rid of that no pain, no gain stuff.
Yeah, cool. Lovely. Thank you so much, Marcus. And I've really enjoyed it. It's been absolutely lovely to talk to you, as always. And thank you for listening to Growth Uncut. For those that are listening, and we hope that you join us again when we talk about growth. If you'd like some more information about what we do, please visit us on www.penalreformsolutions.com or search for us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook by searching Penal Reform Solutions. If you'd like to contribute to the cause, please also look for us on Patreon through www.patreon.com/growthmovement. Thanks so much and catch you next time.